turning astray of the path that was left long ago. All we leave behind, time after time, is a legacy with nothing to show. Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our...
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 96, and what we're going to talk about today is we're going to look at the 10 axioms, or the 10 proverbs, the industrial decalogue, however you want to call it. But they were originally written in 1916 by William John Henry Boichter, and they are applicable to today's age, particularly in light of a most recent election. So I'm going to have some election results, as well as go over these 10 proverbs or 10 principles written back 100 years ago, but still applicable today. So it should be a good show for you. I think you'll like these principles. And so stay tuned for that. Before we do that, I want to direct your attention to just a few announcements. Make sure that you are a registered user of the website. This enables you to access the comment section so that you can give feedback to each of the episodes. It also enables you to get periodic updates through email anytime that there is a update to the website, whether it be a new post or a new podcast, whatever it might be. You will be notified by email when that happens, so you don't need to keep checking back. So it's a convenience to you. Of course, those things are free. And second up is to make sure that you are following us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and all the various social media of which we are a part. And then telling your friends and family about us so that we can continue to gain more access on the social media. I appreciate you doing that. And then finally, make sure that you're visiting us, or make sure that you are visiting the various affiliates that we have. We've got several affiliates which I have approved, and I have gone over them, and either they are personal businesses that I do business with, or they are ones that I have certainly look through, and I approve of them, and they have something to do with what we teach here on the Legacy Podcast. So first up for today is Envelopes. Envelopes is a phenomenal resource if you are one who is concerned about managing your money, which I believe that we all should be if we're going to build a legacy of abundance. And so Envelopes works just like an old-fashioned envelope system that you would work with on cash at your home, with the exception that it's online. And so everything is automated, and you can deduct those various items as you make the transactions on your debit card or on your checking account or whatever they might be. And it just helps you be able to manage your money really, really well. It's also added features such as a debt snowball that you can work with to eliminate your debt faster and all those things. And I think the first 30 days are free, and then after that it's only like an $8 or $9 fee per month after that. And so it's a great resource. Check out Envelopes. Next up is Vision Forum. Vision Forum is another great resource for families who want to build a legacy, because you can get audios, you can get DVDs, various kinds of multimedia resources, and just a good old-fashioned book that can help you develop yourself and develop your family and develop your parenting skills, to be inspired, all of these things, so that you can build a multi-generation legacy of abundance. And they are right in line with what we do here. And in addition to that, of course, they have a great resource in some old-fashioned toys and good boy toys and girl toys that you can acquire for your children. And of course, Christmas is coming up, so if you are inclined to buy something through Vision Forum, I encourage you to go through the website. There's no additional cost to do that, but it does enable me to get a small commission on any sale that is done through the website. So I appreciate you doing that by going through the Legacy Podcast website. And then finally, if you like what we do, I want to encourage you to become a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year. You have access to about $50 worth of value through that, and you can also support the show with less than 25 cents an episode. That's all I'm going to do for the introduction today. And so let's go ahead now and talk about some, first of all, what I want to do is talk about just some election comments. Obviously, when you're hearing this, the elections are over, and the outcomes have been determined. And there's really a lot that I could be said about this, but I'm not going to go an in-depth commentary on them, but I am going to mention just a few points. First of all, the election results reflect the will of the people. And so if we are upset with the results of the elections, which most of us probably are, then we cannot change it from the top down. We have to change the minds of the people so that others are elected in place of those that we currently have. And so education is vitally important. That's why it's important for us to continue to share educational resources, share this show, other shows that even are more directed towards the public policy arenas. And I really encourage you to do that. But anyway, that's the election results reflect the will of the people. So the will of the people have spoken, and we got what we deserved. Not necessarily that we have voted for them, but certainly that's the way it ended up. Second thing is Republicans have to run someone who is substantially different than the status quo if they're going to overcome an incumbent in particular. And so, you know, Mitt Romney was not much different. Every time there was a debate, there was, a great deal of effort made to try to show that they were both going to do the same policies when it came to the big issues. And so nothing was going to really change if Obama was elected, and nothing was really going to change whether Mitt Romney was elected. And so if we're going to run somebody as Republicans, then we need to run somebody that others who are disenfranchised with the Republican Party can get behind. And so, yeah, it was a real discouragement for me and many other liberty-minded people when Ron Paul was basically ostracized and his delegates were ostracized from the Republican convention. And I know that there were several million who decided not to vote as a result of the actions of the Republican convention. And those millions who could have voted for Romney but didn't because of that action really could have tipped the scale. And so if they're going to vote, if they're going to want young people's vote, if they're going to want some real change, there need to be a real change at the Republican Party. Third thing is incumbents are really hard to beat, no matter how good or how bad they are. Here in Virginia, it's crazy, but every single incumbent got reelected. And so it's really hard to beat incumbents, and term limits would be a help in this matter. But of course, people who are already in office are not going to vote for term limits because, of course, that would kick them out of office. And so I don't really know the solution to that, but that is what it is. So that's all the comments I have about elections. I'm not going to really go in depth about that. But I do want to comment about the wisdom of William John Henry Boyter, who lived back at the turn of the 20th century, so in the early parts of the 1900s. And he was a Presbyterian minister and notable public speaker, served as a director of the Pro-Employer Citizens Industrial Alliance. That was probably like a conservative think tank who was opposed to unions, something like that. It was a position he held when in 1960 he produced a booklet of nuggets from his lectures that he would go around. And these maxims that he came to be identified with later were made into a book, and they were crystallized into what became known as the Industrial Decalogue, or the 10 don'ts and 10 cannots, the 10 things you cannot do, or American's Charter. All of those are comments or descriptions of these 10 principles that he began to communicate in his lectures back in 1916. And it's interesting that we do not hear much of this man. He was a pastor and public speaker, and that may be part of it. But other than that, many of his axioms are still applicable in a large part today, and they are still issues that are being discussed on the campaign trail today. So I just want to go through these 10 and just make a few comments about each one of them. First of all, he says, you cannot bring about prosperity by discouraging thrift. You cannot bring about prosperity by discouraging thrift. You know, governments have a great deal of wasteful spending, and whether you're Republican or Democrat or somewhere in between or off the side or whatever it is, it doesn't take long to realize that there is a great deal of waste involved in government. And in each group, they are talking about, you know, if they get elected, they're going to, you know, go through a fine-tooth comb and look at all where the areas are where there is waste and cut out the waste and all this kind of stuff. They talk a big talk, but in reality, they really don't. And in fact, they're just encouraged to spend more. But until we come to the realization that it is thrift that enables us to grow and prosper, we will be heading in the wrong direction. What do we have being broadcasted loudly on the radio stations, on televisions, by economists everywhere? They're telling us to spend, spend, spend. And it is as though the consumer is the ultimate goal of the modern day economy, when in reality, that shouldn't be the case. It's not the consumer that makes a country and a people prosperous. It's actually the thrift and the savings of those people. And so his first one, you cannot bring about prosperity by discouraging thrift. Secondly, you cannot strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. You cannot strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. Financially, the strong in the country are the wealthy, the 1%, the 5%. And to weaken them through progressive tax structures does not strengthen anything but the government, who creates more dependence on their redistribution. Taking from the strong and giving to the weak does something else. It makes the weak become weaker. Sometimes we think that by taking from the weak and giving to the strong, you'll give them that hands up that they need, the little support that they need to get them going. But in reality, what it does, it makes them weaker. It makes them more dependent, less independent, less able to acquire for themselves. They acquire a false amount of production and does not motivate them otherwise. And so you cannot strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. Number three is you cannot help the little man by tearing down the big man. You cannot help the little man by tearing down the big man. You know, I'm all for the little guy. I'm also for the big guy. But, you know, it's phrases like, you know, the Wall Street fat cats. They're the ones that need to pay. Things like that. Tearing down those who are industrious, who are capitalists. I think of Elizabeth Warren, I think was the one that originally said this. Of course, Obama picked it up. Elizabeth Warren, by the way, captured the seat in Massachusetts that Scott Brown had. And what she said was disheartening, to say the least. And then, of course, Obama ran with it. And that was in speaking about businesses, that they did not build the business, and business owners did not build the business, but that for every, you know, business, there's a teacher that came along the way, or the roads that the government built, or whatever it might be. And, you know, you talk to a business owner and that they're disgusted by the very fact that someone would say that about the business that they have built. And, you know, the government didn't do anything to help build me my business. In fact, they got in the way every step of the way. And so you cannot help the little men by tearing down the big men. And, you know, most of the big men are business owners. And the more you tear them down, the harder it is for everyone. Number four is you cannot lift the wage earner by pulling down the wage payer. You cannot lift the wage earner by tearing down the wage payer. You know, there's a lot of different laws that have been passed over time to try to even the playing field, to try to take from the wage payer and give it to the wage earner. This is the whole concept of unionization in a lot of ways, where, you know, negotiations of contracts will take place and the forced unionization. And, you know, we've pretty much destroyed the automotive industry because of the, you know, labor unions and these kinds of things. And then, you know, most recently, in fact, I think it was the first bill that Obama passed was the Lilly Ledbetter Act. And I want to just comment a few things about that. The Lilly Ledbetter Act, or Fair Pay Act of 2009, came into a federal statute in the United States. It was first bill signed into law by President Barack Obama on January 29, 2009. The act amends the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and the new act states that the 180-day statute of limitation for filing an equal pay lawsuit regarding pay discrimination resets with each new paycheck affected by that discriminatory action. And so what this says basically is that you have 180 days from the time that you last got your paycheck to be able to complain if you think that you are being unfairly treated or unfairly paid based upon your gender. And so if there's a woman in the workforce and, you know, she's been working happily at a company for 25 years, getting a paycheck, and then for some reason she realizes that, you know, maybe I'm not getting paid what I should, and this other guy came on here recently and he's getting paid a little bit more. And so she files a suit against the company. And as a result of that, she is able to acquire back pay for the whole 20 years or so, 25 years that she was employed with that company and receive wages. This will bankrupt companies. And what this is really doing is it is pulling down the wage payer and trying to create a false impression of even playing field, when in reality all it does is it hurts the women now, who will have a more difficult time trying to find work because companies are going to be less likely to hire them. That is, the smaller companies anyway. So you cannot lift the wage earner by pulling down the wage payer. Number five, you cannot help the poor by destroying the rich. You cannot help the poor by destroying the rich. You know, communists have tried this. Socialists have tried this. But it's the rich who invest and provide developmental capital. It's the capital that makes capitalism work. It is the rich who have the most capital. And if you destroy the rich and the capital that they have, where is investment going to come? Where is it going to be where there is going to be research, where there's going to be people who are willing to take a risk, put their money on the line, and start a new company, start a new line, start a new brand? Destroy the capital and you destroy the wealth of all. And so you cannot help the poor by destroying the rich. Number six, you cannot establish sound security on borrowed money. You know, we are a debtor nation. It hasn't always been that way. We were at one point a creditor nation. But now, of course, we are the largest of debtor nations. In fact, I don't know the statistics exactly, but I think that we have more debt than all the other nations combined. And so we are a significant debtor nation. Now, I'm going to put a link in show notes as to this article that I'm getting this information from, but I want to mention briefly where to whom we are most indebted. And in 2011, our debt was $13.5 trillion. Now, of course, it's $16 trillion. So these numbers are already out of date pretty significantly. But $2.4 trillion is owned to the Social Security Trust Fund. Now, of course, that will never be repaid. The way that they are paying it now is that they are actually taking out new loans to put into the trust fund when it's needed to pay out distributions to the Social Security recipients. So $2.4 trillion in the Social Security fund, and then over one-third of it is owned to foreign countries. That's over $4.5 billion. And $1.6 trillion of it is owed to China. Of course, that's the single biggest foreign holder of our currency and our debt. $854 billion is owed Japan. And then we've got $217 billion is owed to Ecuador, Venezuela, Indonesia, Bahrain, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Algeria, Gabon, Libya, Nigeria. Those are all, of course, oil-producing countries, and so you can see the relationship there. When we import oil and have to borrow the money to be able to do so, we are borrowing from those oil-producing countries. And then $190 billion is owed to the United Kingdom. So get that. The United Kingdom owes, we owe the United Kingdom money, but of course, they're in bad shape as well, but not nearly as bad as us who owe them money. $176 billion to Brazil and $1.6 trillion to all the other foreign countries. And so that combines all the rest of them together in that one formula. And, you know, the scriptures are really clear. The borrower is slave to the lender. And so we owe all this money to all these different foreign nations. And if they were to call those loans, we would be in severe, severe trouble. Number seven is, you cannot further the brotherhood of men by inciting class hatred. You cannot further the brotherhood of men by inciting class hatred. You know, the media, politicians, and many others are trying to polarize and incite class hatred. We have this this already developing in great respects when we have the criticism of the 1%, and the 1% are, you know, not paying their fair share, and they need to pay more, and, you know, all this thing. And then, you know, we've got the middle class complaining that the problem is, you know, the welfare and the food stamp recipients. You know, it doesn't take long for someone to go through a grocery store and see someone using food stamps and then begin to complain and grumble about, you know, what they have. And all this is, of course, is just inciting class warfare, class warfare between the haves and the have-nots. And then, you know, blaming recipients of Social Security would be another way. Young people are often doing this, saying that, you know, the Social Security, of course, is broke and they're still getting benefits and they haven't been raised high enough. And, of course, the young people don't really see any of those things. And so you cannot further the brotherhood of men by inciting class hatred. That's number seven. Number eight, you cannot keep out of trouble by spending more than you earn. You cannot keep out of trouble by spending more than you earn. You know, it's true on a personal level, it's true on a business level, and it's true on a governmental level that you cannot spend more than you earn. Now, the federal government, now take this, I'm going to compare this to a personal asset or a personal cash flow statement. And the federal government will take in $2.173 trillion in 2011. Now, I don't know what they will in 2012 or 2013. I think those have been projected, but I don't have those statistics with me. But the federal government will take in $2.173 trillion. Now, the problem is that they'll spend $3.818 trillion during the year. And so that's an offset of $1.645 trillion in overspending. That's significant. I mean, that is an incredible amount of overspending. That's called the deficit. And although the government has $14.2 trillion, or at least that's the statistic at this time, now it's over $16 trillion in debt, they're continuing to go into debt at an astronomical rate. And so let's put that into perspective of a household. What would that look like? Well, if you had a household income of $55,000 a year, it would mean that in comparison, you would have to be spending $96,500. And so, you know, almost twice as much, $96,500. So that would mean $41,500 more than you made, you'd be spending as a household. Now, let me ask, this does not take rocket science to figure this out, and all of us can see where this is going, but how long are you going to be able to be sustainable in that course? And so the question is, how long will our government be able to be sustainable when they're continuing to spin at these astronomical rates? $41,500 more than they currently make. That means that they're spending 175% of their annual income. So in 2011, they'll add $41,500 of debt to their current credit card limit of $366,000. So when you compare the $16 trillion or the $15 trillion or whatever it is that the federal government has, and you compare that on a personal family scale, a household income scale and revenue model, then that would mean that they would be putting on $41,500 extra onto a bill of already $366,000 on their credit card. Oh, it's incredible. So what's the first step in getting out of debt? It's stop borrowing. You cannot dig your way out of the hole. And until our government realizes that, we're going to continue to go in the wrong course. So you can't borrow your way out of debt. Number eight, you cannot keep out of trouble by spending more than you earn. Number nine, then, is you cannot build character and courage by destroying men's initiative and independence. You cannot build character and courage by destroying men's initiative and independence. Character is built by taking chances, by failing, by learning, by growing, and then by trying again. It's built by people taking responsibility for winning and for losing. Courage is someone taking their capital and investing in some tools and starting a business. That's what courage is all about. And when a government or a people start expecting someone else to take care of them or someone else to provide them with something, they lose the courage, they lose the initiative, they destroy their character, and they destroy their independence. And so you cannot build character and courage by destroying men's initiative and independence. And then finally, number 10, you cannot help men permanently by doing for them what they can do or should do for themselves. You've heard it said this way before, I'm sure. You can give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. If you teach him to fish, you will feed him forever. And what if parents, and I'm going to be a little gross here, but just imagine this. What if parents still wiped the butt of their children when they were 10 or 15 years old? Can you imagine? That's just unheard of. Why? Because they should be doing that on their own by that point. And that's the way it is. When we continue to help somebody and do for them what they should do on their own, we don't build independence or courage or initiative. All we're building is dependence, weakness. So our society continues to do that, though, all the time. You look at the health care. When we provide comprehensive health care and we provide no accountability, where people don't even know what their bill is or how much to charge, or they can't shop around, or anything like that, because it's all done through third parties and negotiated contracts and all this kind of stuff. All that does is it encourages abuse and encourages a lack of independence, instead dependency upon the systems that are already present. And that should not be. That's what's going on. That's what's been wrong in the first place and what continues to go on. So some issues never seem to change, do they? These principles were written almost 100 years ago, and nothing changed. They only have been increasing in the strength and depth and definition and pronouncement since then. And so my question is, if we're going to build a legacy of abundance for ourselves and also for others, then we must agree with and be patterning our lives by the principles that we have outlined here. Not only for our own lives, but also for society. And so, we can't do much about the elections. We can't really change those right now. We can't do anything about that, really. We've got 2 years at the minimum, sometimes 4 or 6 years before we make some changes there. But what can we do? Well, we can start with ourselves and make the changes with ourselves that we need to make so that we can be building legacies of abundance. We can move towards public policy later, but for now, let us be diligent to heed these principles in our own lives, and then we can move towards others. Well, hopefully that's been helpful for you, just as we outlined those 10 different principles, and certainly they articulate some of the problems and some of the debates that are taking place even in our culture today. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?
We start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? Thank you. happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? What will you do?